Welcome to All the Things with Kristen Schindler. We all have things. Doesn't matter if we're married or single, if we have no children, or if we have 10. Things in life can be overwhelming, and sometimes we just don't know how to navigate them. So each week, you're going to hear stories of hope, of inspiration, and of people navigating the same things that you and I deal with day in and day out. Their stories may sound different than ours, or they may sound just like us. Either way, each week this podcast is going to pour into your heart with hope and encouragement. We are so glad that you are here. Welcome back, friends, to another episode of All the Things with Kristen Schindler. Today, I'm so excited to have with you Cameron Caswell, also known as Dr. Cam. She has her PhD in adolescent psychology, and she is also a family success coach. She is a teen translator and author, and she's also a fellow podcaster and host of Parenting Teens with Dr. Cam. Her mission is to help parents build strong, positive relationships with their teens. She focuses on improved communication, connection, and really understanding. She uses a prime parenting method, and I'm really excited to talk about that today. So welcome, Dr. Cam.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You are very, very welcome. Well, you and I connected via the lovely world of Facebook.
Yes.
And I thought it was so interesting, especially I'm in the world of parenting teens. I have, two official teens. And then I have a preteen who really honestly is like a teen, right, for all practical purposes. And so I thought it was really interesting to talk about, especially what's going on right now with the world and teens being at home. What are your thoughts about right now, especially? You talk about teens acting out because they feel misunderstood. How do you think that what's going on right now in our world is affecting teens in that capacity, especially? Are you talking to families about that? Or
quite a bit. Yes. It's what I'm finding is that this time is actually just highlighting problems. If they already were there, it's just making them more obvious because we're home all the time. So in the past, kids were off at school, they were off at events, they were off at practice, we were off at work. And so the interaction was not quite as consistent as it is right now. And so if parents are having trouble communicating with their teens, it's really prevalent right now. And then I think because of that, we also add on to that some of, there's fear, there's frustration. Kids especially are frustrated because they can't hang out with their friends. So many of them want to go back to school. Kids that used to complain about going to school are now complaining that they're not in school. They miss that interaction. And so there's a lot of just pent up frustration, added anxiety, and things like that. So one of the things that I tell parents is this is actually a crazy opportunity for us to reconnect with our teens. And even before all of this happened, we have started to disconnect from our teens. And this is fairly common because, like you said, teens are misunderstood. Parents really misunderstand their teens, and they translate their behavior into things like defiance and, just talking back and being overly emotional. And really, there's reasons behind those behaviors. And so when we understand them, we can really respond to them in a much more effective, calm way. And so I'm telling parents, now that you have more time with your kids, use that to actually spend more time with your kids. And when we spend more time with them and we're able to reconnect and have a stronger relationship with them and a trusting relationship that actually improves their mental health, whether or not they're home or away, it's across the board. It'll improve their mental health.
I completely agree. And I think too, another aspect that we, that I see, at least with my kids, is I know when they were little and they would be watching, like when, you know, I used to work outside of the home, and when I would have to be getting ready in the morning, or we'd come home from a long day at school, or they had been at daycare and then I'm getting ready for dinner or whatever, you know, oftentimes they would have a little bit of technology. And what I saw with my kids when they were younger, and this kind of started my thoughts on how technology affects their brain, is that when they would be on their technology, and it didn't matter what it was. I mean, it could be watching a Thomas the Train movie, which my oldest was really into Thomas the Train when he was little. But what we would find is that when they would get off of screen time, the backlash, it was almost like a storm. You know, you see like these big winter storms and they're like, okay, well, you think it's going to be over, but then it wraps around and it comes back at you. That it was kind of like that kind of behavior. It was like his brain was so engaged, or their brains were so engaged. And then when you turned it off, it was almost like then this release of all this pent up frustration and energy and things like that would happen. And that was problematic, because then it comes out as bad behavior, you know, that kind of stuff. But what I also see is that even now with my teens, when you try to sit down, because you're having such, you know, confinement, when you do try to sit down, even as a family, we tried to sit down and play a game the other day, and the irritation with each other, just, it was there. So even trying to have fun was like they were on edge, you know, not being able to have that released. So what are some tips that you give parents during this time when they are spending time with their teens, when that kind of behavior manifests?
Because that behavior does manifest, and it manifests frequently. And it's not because there's anything wrong with your teen. In fact, it's a sign of healthy development with your teen. What happens, there's a few things that are happening there. You know, you mentioned the social media and the device use, and there's a lot of controversy around that. There are studies that show that actually it depends on what they're doing on it, but kids actually can use that as a form of comfort and calming, and it does fuel their brain. You know, they love their brain right now when they're in adolescent stage, craves stimulation and novelty. And so it feels good to be on these phones and playing video games. And so when we just say, go put it down, turn it off, go do something else, well, yes, they're going to fight back because we're asking them to stop doing something pleasurable and that they really enjoy, to do something probably far less pleasurable and enjoyable and definitely less stimulating. And so when we just have this argument with them and then get upset that they won't just put it down, then we get, you know, this emotions kind of spirals out of control, rather than saying, okay, I understand why my teen is on it. I mean, as adults, it's hard to get off them. Teens, it's even harder because they don't have that formed prefrontal cortex that is saying, okay, time to put it down because this is why. So we have to understand, we got to give them some warnings. We've got to explain to them a little bit more of why we need to put them down. We also have to be a little bit more open, especially nowadays, to them using it, because this is the way that they're connecting with their friends, and they need to connect with their friends.
Definitely.
So I always tell people, it's not so much about how much time, it's about what they're doing on it, and teaching them to be smart on it, to make good choices, teaching them how to learn moderation, and finding things that they enjoy to do other than that they can then want. So there's something else they want to do. Because if we're saying stop doing that to do something that we know you don't want to do, of course they're going to push back. I mean, who wouldn't? You know, so I think really understanding that. The other thing is, if you want to spend time, and I talk to a lot of parents that say, yeah, I want to spend time with my teen. They don't want anything to do with me. They're locked up in their room. They don't want to spend time with me. There's a few things I ask at that point. The first very basic one, well, is it fun to hang out with you? Because, you know, we will say we want to spend time. And I, you know, I talked to one teen the other day whose parent was upset that they weren't spending time with them, but the parent wanted to watch a football game and the teen had no interest in watching the football game. And then the parent was upset that the teen didn't want to spend time with them. Well, no, because you're asking them to do something that they have no interest in doing. They would rather be on their phones talking to their friends. So are you doing something that they actually want to do? And meet them where they are. If they love to play video games, then why not ask them to teach you about their video game? Maybe even play it with them. I tell stories about when my nephew, who's in his 20s now, but when he was a teenager, he was really into World of Warcraft. And so my sister and I both said, okay, teach us how to play. And he helped us build our avatars and he taught us how to play. I'm terrible at it. I was just bumping into walls, but we had so much fun and he would talk about it for a long time. He loved talking about it. And so we'd get this conversation going. Well, now he wanted to hang out because we listened to him and what he liked to do. So meet your kids where they're at and show interest, even if you're not interested in it, show interest in it because you actually might learn something really cool.
I know. I've had to draw the line at Minecraft because I get so dizzy. My daughter's like, hey, come see it. And I'm like, okay, I will look at your house, but I'm not staying for more than 2 minutes because I get so, she's like moving around and I'm like, ah, you know, I'm like, okay. But she wants to show me everything she's built. She wants, you know, the other day, my older son, he's gotten back into Minecraft because his younger sister's excited about it. And so he was showing me his house he built and he's like, and here's the bar. And I'm like, what do you have a bar for? He's like, Mom, that's where we make potions. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, just making sure, you know.
It's Minecraft. It's Among Us is another one that you can get. I've been playing that with my daughter and my nieces and nephews. And we all get in there and play. And it's, I think one of the things you just said, though, I think is really interesting, though, is like, when you go on, your head's spinning, right? And it's like you only can deal with it for 2 minutes. Well, think about it when we ask them to do stuff that we want to do. You know, the same way. Yeah. And then we get upset that they don't want to spend time with us, right?
Right. Well, it's also, too, I had this just happen this week. It's hard when the time that wants to be spent that our clocks are off, you know, like the other night, my daughter, you know, she's 10 and she wanted to spend time with me. And we happened to have been up late watching a movie, the kids and I, and then it was like getting everybody ready to go to bed. And since we homeschool, so we sometimes do second shift schooling anyway, just because, you know, we can, but it was late, you know, and it was like 11:45 and I'm like, let's get moving to bed. Come on, go, you know? And she's like, I just want to come and sit with you and talk. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired, you know, but she wasn't tired. And so that's also, you know, it's as a parent, like when you've been going since, you know, 5:30 in the morning or 6 o'clock and then, you know, pushing through to just say, okay, I'm just going to take a couple deep breaths. I'm going to get a second wind because they want to talk to me now. Like now's when I need to be available for them. And that's, and oftentimes you have to be cognizant of it. And that's the hard part. Cause the kids aren't going to say, you know, although my daughter will, she's like, Mom, you say you want to spend time with us right now. I'd like to talk to you. And now you're telling me I'm too tired, you know? And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're like, you're so verbal. That's so, so glad that you're telling me how you feel, you know? So tell us about your prime parenting method. What is that all about?
So it's really a way to break down how to deal with these behaviors that we don't understand or are frustrating for us. And I broke it down in a way that can deal with pretty much, I mean, every teenager is different, every parent's different, every dynamic is different. Families have different values and what's important. So I broke it down in a way that really can be used no matter who you are or what the focus is. And the it's really an acronym, of course. Everyone loves acronyms, including me. And so the P is for the problem. And so this is actually the process I walk a lot of my parents that I coach through this process when they come to me and they go, oh my gosh, my teen is so disrespectful, I can't deal with it, or so lazy, I can't deal with it. I mean, the common things, I can't motivate them. So what I say is, let's get more specific on the problem. When you say your kid is lazy, or they lie, or they're disrespectful, that's pretty vague. You know, that could mean a whole lot of things. So let's get specifically, what behavior are they doing that shows that they're disrespectful? When are they doing it? Is there something that triggers that? Who do they do it with? Is it with everyone or is it just with you? You know, what are the circumstances around it? But really, what is the behavior? Because now we can target something. Fixing a kid that's disrespectful, mm-hmm. how do you do that? Fixing a behavior and trying to approach a behavior of disrespect, now we can do something about that, right? Then we go into the reason. What's the reason behind the behavior? And this is really important because there is always, every single time, there is a reason. And it's not because the teen is a brat. It is because something is going on that is triggering that response in your teen. And there's a lot of things that this can be. A lot of it is just developmental. I mean, again, the teen's brain grows unevenly. Their emotion centers fully developed. The prefrontal cortex, which controls their emotions and impulses, that's not going to be developed in well into their 20s. So they're running on emotion. They don't have the capacity to control it like we do. They also aren't as aware of how their behavior is coming across. So they may say something that to us is seen as being disrespectful. To them, it's just seen as them having a voice and expressing their opinion, which we want to enable them to have a voice and teach them how to have a voice. We just have to help them learn how to say in a way that feels more respectful to us. So they're not disrespectful. They're talking in a way that comes across as disrespectful. So what is the reason behind that behavior? Maybe they're really tired. Maybe they're really stressed. Maybe there's something going on at school and they're really struggling with a topic and they don't know who to ask for help. You know, so let's figure out what the behavior is. Then we go to your intention, which is the I. What do you want to accomplish out of this? When we go into a behavior and we do a knee-jerk reaction, it's usually to stop the response, stop that behavior in the moment, however we can, and we just shut it down. Well, when we just shut it down, our intention then is just for peace for us, right? To make our lives easier for us, to try to say we win in this situation, rather than is my intention to teach my teen how to solve this better, how to have a better way to approach this. What do I want them? How do I want them to respond to me instead? You know, if they're rolling their eyes and stomping their feet to try to make a point because they don't feel like they're being heard, well, what do I want to teach them? I want to teach them how to voice them their opinion in a way that feels more respectful, right? So then we want to go to M, and that is really what is our mindset? And for this, we want to look at changing our focus from my child is a liar. My child is disrespectful. This is where they are something. This is who they are. Well, if you're saying your child is a liar, they're learning, well, I'm a liar. That's a label on me. I'm a liar. So everything I do, they're just going to assume I'm lying. So why not just lie, right? Or they're just going to believe I'm lying. Instead of saying, my child has a bad habit of lying, they seem to resort to lying frequently right now to get out of certain things. How do I address this behavior? So now we're not saying my child is broken. We're saying there's a behavior that I need to help them learn how to overcome and to change. And the final one is E, which is empower. And this is giving them the tools to do it on their own. instead of running in and fixing things for them, which as parents, we all want to do because we don't want our kids to fail. We don't want to see them hurt. We just want to fix it. But when we jump in and fix it, we're telling them, I don't believe that you are able to fix it. I don't trust you to fix it. And I'm also not teaching you how to fix it on your own. So when you go out into the real world, you don't have the tools now. You have to call me or call your boss or someone else to ask how to do it. So let's give them the tools. Teach them to problem solve. Teach them to negotiate. Teach them how to argue. Teach them it's okay to fail. All of these things are the skills they're primed to learn right now, but they're learning them. So they're not going to be good at them at first. So we got to let them do it and fail and try again until they know how to do it. So that's prime.
I love it. I love it. I was taking my own notes, but, and you know, I think that what you're right on the money. And what I have seen a lot, my best friend told me when I first started homeschooling, you know, you're going to be doing a lot of heart work with your kids. Like that's the biggest lessons that you're going to be working on are with their hearts. And I was just like, I don't even, what are you talking about? Like I'm with my kids all the time. Right. But especially just within the last year, you know, they're so different. All children are different. But what I found too, is that the way that they respond is it's really, really important to get to that root of why they are responding that way and have them recognize the way that they're responding. And we had something that happened the other day and it was like a domino effect. And, you know, my older son responded a certain way. And then it was just like, and so the whole day, like, I was just like, okay, this is what the lesson is today. We got to talk this out. Like you guys have to talk to each other. Why are you treating each other that way? Why did you respond that way? Like think about it. And then while they talked about it, well, I just feel like, you know, he said something last night that was really hurtful. And I just feel like, you know, nobody listens to what I have to say, you know, goes back to what you were saying about not being heard. And then the other sibling was like, well, I feel like he doesn't ever want to spend time with me. You know, I want to spend time with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I'm just like, okay. And then, you know, and then the littlest one is saying, you know, how she feels. And so, and then everybody's crying, you know, there's tears. And I just said, look at each other. You all are hurting the way that you're not communicating effectively with each other is causing pain and sadness. And I said, and you have to learn how to communicate with each other so that your feelings are heard in such a way that you don't have resentment. Because I said, I'm not always going to be here to help you with this. And you have got to have a relationship with each other separate from me. And you have got to know that you are always there for each other. And it is exhausting.
I'm not gonna lie. So
it is.
One of the things I think that actually is going to help is I think it's exhausting because we are trying to do too much of the wrong thing. We're trying so hard to fix, to control, to mediate, to do all these things, which is exhausting. What our teens really need us to do right now is to listen, to let them do it on their own and let them fail and just be there to support them when they do and to help them guide them. I think we want to do less of the doing and we want to do more of the listening and the supporting. They're teenagers now. It's time for them to learn to do it on their own. So if you're exhausted, you know, raising your teens, think about what you can give them ownership of.
Yeah. It is hard when they are at that point where they're so similar in ages, I think, that the emotions get out of control. And that's the part that's hard is, you know, not letting them hurt each other with their words or, get so loud. And, that's, it's such a fine line to reel it back in and say, okay, you guys need to take a break. You guys need to, you're not talking to each other kindly. Like, that's not okay. That's a hard line to navigate. Just to kind of like go back to your
Yeah.
corners. We're not gonna,
I think one way to really address this is if you see a behavior that's reoccurring frequently and you go, okay, this is one of the behaviors I need to address. And one of the things that I recommend parents do is pick one, maximum two behaviors at a time to address. Because if we start trying to fix everything, I have talked to far too many teens that feel like they can do nothing right because their parents are constantly pointing out all the things that they need to do differently. And so then they just give up. They don't care anymore and they don't even try. So when we focus on, let's think of what are one or two max behaviors that we really want to address that we think will probably impact a lot of the other ones, kind of that domino effect. What is one big behavior that may trickle down to the other ones? And then we talk to them about it and say, okay, this is the behavior we're going to address. Here's why it's a problem. Here's what it's concern. Here's what we're, let's talk about what we expect. And you set these boundaries. I'm not a big rule person because I think, you set a ton of rules. They're easy to break. They're hard to keep track of. But boundaries give kids an idea of where do you cross the line and give them a lot of freedom in between to figure it out for themselves. And figure out what works for themselves. So it's kind of like, here's the boundaries. Here's where it's gone too far. And here's the consequence of when it goes too far. The consequence is clear. We know exactly where that line is. We know exactly what happens when you cross the line. Now, when they cross that line, it's a matter of you've crossed that line. This is the consequence. And there's not a whole lot more that has to be said about it at that point. And the more you're consistent with it, because if you say, oh, well, this time I'm going to let it go, well, now it'll never work again. So it has to be something that it's fair to what it is. It teaches them, it's related to what it is. Natural consequences are by far the best if they are safe, and doable. But if you can allow the natural consequence to happen, and you let it happen and you say that's the result of what you knew that was going to happen, that's the result. It's not a matter of lecturing anymore. It's like, we've already talked about this. This is the consequence. Now you're going to have to deal with the consequence. I'm not saving you out of this, right? Because you made the decision, know the resort, what the consequence was. And now they're learning, okay, well, the next time I do that, I know what the consequence is. If they continue to do that, then clearly the consequence isn't enough to stop them from doing it. And you may want to reconsider that. But it needs to be clear. It needs to be consistent. It needs to always be the same, no matter what parent is there, what child does it. It's got to be consistent so that everyone knows this is where the line is and this is what happens when we cross the line.
Yeah, consistency is key really for so many aspects of our lives in general. But something that you talked about that I think is that I'd like to circle back to. I know that one of the things that I have noticed, and I noticed this a lot more when I was in education. I taught 8th grade for many, many, many years. And one of the things that I think is a disservice to our teens is that they are big enough, they are old enough, they are strong enough to do real, meaningful work. And some children do that. But I think so many of our teens, they don't have the opportunity to do real work, and they don't have that pride in what they're doing. And when they don't have that, then they're just checking off boxes to get done because someone else is telling them that they have to do this. And then that
Oh gosh.
resentment
Yeah. Yeah.
builds. And so one of the things that, we're trying really hard with our kiddos is them taking ownership of things that they could easily do that maybe, when, when they were younger, it was easier for time. You know, you're coming home, you're doing your, getting your dinner ready, you're cleaning up, you're getting kids in the tub, you know, all those things that you have to do when you're balancing everything. But once they're old enough to actually help, I think the sooner we can release the control and have them do real work and see that they're a part of everything, and telling them, like, you're good at this. You're capable of doing this. So for me to keep doing it for you is not helping you.
I 100% agree. Purpose, ownership is very important. One caveat to that, Kristen, because I hear a lot of people say, well, they won't do it, or, you know, they don't do it the way I want, and it ends up being a battle. When we give them ownership, we've got to give them ownership. If we're constantly telling them how to do it, what they did wrong, when to do it, they don't own it. We own it, and they're just doing it for us. And so they're going to push back. When they have ownership of it, and we, and here's the thing, I know they don't always do it up to our par, our standards, right? When they do that, refrain from going in and pointing it out right away. You know, I talk to parents and they're like, they finally cleaned their room. Absolutely. It was this big argument. They finally did it. I went in and I saw it, and I saw this big spot on the floor, and I said, you forgot that spot, and my child lost it. Well, of course they lost it, and they're never going to clean their bathroom without a fight again, because they just spent an hour cleaning, and you could have said, wow, look at how shiny the mirror is. You did a great job with that. Look at how clean the sink is. No, you pointed out the one thing they did wrong. So we've got to make sure, if there's a thing, if they're washing dishes, you know, and they don't, they miss a spot, you don't have to say, look what you did wrong. You can say, wow, thank you for this. I see sometimes I have trouble getting spots off. I have this really cool trick to get spots off like this. If you want me to show it to you, I can show it to you. And most likely they'll be like, oh yeah, yeah, show me that trick. You're not putting them down for it. You're just saying, look, here's another idea to help, right? Without saying you did something wrong. We give them ownership. We allow them to choose. My daughter now does my laundry for me. She's always coming up, Mom, I'm doing laundry. You want me to do it? She loves doing the laundry because that's her thing. Mm-hmm. I never comment on how she does her laundry, and she does it really well now. It's taken her time to learn. But that's her thing. She does it when she wants to do it, and now she owns it. And so that is the biggest piece of that, is allowing them to own it and allowing them to fail at it if they do.
Right. I think that's so true. My children they've always helped with laundry. Like, okay, let's, you know, take a load down, start a load, please, you know, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. We've kind of done it as a big joint effort. And recently we've moved to them all being in charge of their own laundry. And because we have five of us in the house, you know, we rotate days, because then they know, okay, well, in 2 days' time, I'm going to have enough for a full load. Right. So that's kind of what we do. Like, okay, today's, you know, Ava's laundry day, and so forth and so on. And, you know, and helping them, like, okay, well, how are you going to make sure that when your laundry is done, that you know to move it from the washer to the dryer and it doesn't get moldy? And like, well, how could you do that? Well, I could set a timer on my phone. Yeah, exactly. That sounds great. And then that's your responsibility. And because if kids are able to, like, put clothes on, like, if they're old enough to actually, like, physically dress themselves, they're old enough to start learning how to do laundry. Like, that's, I mean, I think, but we often don't let them help with those types of things because it just takes longer. You know, we're so used to just doing things, you know, got to get it done quick and, you know, whatever. So what is, you mentioned reining them in to rise them up. What do you mean by that?
Was fascinating. Instead of reining them in, what we end up doing is we often rein our kids in. There's a lot of fear we have. we, you know, there's a lot of things that we want to make sure that they're being, you know, their dreams are reasonable and they're not creating crazy dreams. And we want to make sure that their life has success and things like that. And we end up really holding our children and kind of boxing them in a little bit to keep them in the safe zone. And instead of letting them dream really big, instead of letting them explore and think crazy thoughts and think crazy dreams and just letting them lean into that, because when we do that and when we let them dream, they will end up finding the motivation to do things. They will end up having that purpose you were talking about, having that excitement for the future, and just being able to look forward to something instead of feeling like they're so tied down to everything that we're telling them they need to do. And so I always encourage parents to dream with their kids and to not question their dreams, to just dream with them and go, wow, that's amazing. How would you do that? If you want to do that, what could you do now to start preparing for that? You know, and there's things out there that to us may seem really impractical, but oh my gosh, if every parent and every child did what was practical, we would never be on the moon or have Disney World or, you know, any of these amazing things around us, right? Even have social media.
Absolutely.
Sorry, all of these things were crazy pipe dreams. So who are we to tell our kids what they can and can't do? So I talk to kids a lot that are young and they're already despondent and depressed about their future because they see this path of just boring something they don't want to do just because it's safe and they've been told it'll make money and it's not what they want. And so letting them dream is a really big one.
And, you know, I think too, a part of that as a parent is going against the grain of things that, like, the way that we were parented or just the traditional systems that we have always grown up in. If we've always just kind of done what's always been done. It can be frightening to say, you know, and I know that we had a similar situation with my son, who's a senior this year, and he knew that he didn't want to go the four-year college route. He knew that as a 10th grader. And so we talked and I was like, well, you could either stay where you are. I was homeschooling his younger brother and sister. And I said, you could either stay where you are and have to take the classes that they're telling you have to take. And if that's the case, if you want to do that, like, we'll stick with you. I'll support that choice, but just know what the next 2 years are going to entail for you. And then when you're done with those 2 years, then you're going to have to decide what it is that you want to do. Or you could hack your own education and you could start taking classes now that you're wanting to take, to see if this line of, you know, and for him, it's welding. He wanted to be a welder and he wanted to see how that was. And so I said, look, we could take you today and we could go check out the local community college and see if you could take some intro classes to see if you'd even like it. He had done it for fun, you know, on a vacation one time. But for him, it was like, and he's one of these kids that learns best that way. But I think you're right. It has to be something they have to have the buy-in and they have to want to do it. And I think too often we don't take in consideration the natural ways that kids learn. And there was a great analogy the other day about popcorn. And it was about how, you know, you can put the oil in the pan and you could have the oil at the same temperature. But when you put those kernels in there, they don't all pop at the same time, even though they're being put in at the same time with the same oil at the same temperature, like they all pop at their own time. And I think, but too often, I think parents are afraid. They're afraid of the judgment of other people. They're afraid of the judgment of even close family, that if my kid's doing something different than the trajectory that everybody else is doing, that they're going to be labeled as weird or, you know, whatever. And so it's easy for parents to want to keep the kids in those boxes. And it can have tragic, you know, tragic effects on them.
It can, Chris, and I would love to.
But I know that just today, my daughter is, she's like, I really want to understand my multiplication tables. Like, I'm tired of not being able to remember them. And I'm like, okay, so that's what we're going to focus on. You know, like, okay, let's figure it out. Like, how do you think you have to learn that for it to stick? Because it hasn't stuck up until now, you know, but she wants it now. You know, it's not something I've wanted for her or I'm forcing on her. Now she really, really wants it. And so she'll flourish now.
I think one of the things too that you were saying was, you know, we don't want them to be seen as weird. And that's one thing that I talk about a lot too, because I've talked to parents who are very concerned about their kids being bullied or being labeled and called names and fitting in. And so they will do whatever they can to steer them in a different direction, steer them in a more acceptable direction. And the thing I really want to say about this is that when we do that, we are telling our kids that who they are authentically, what is true to them, is not okay. And it's more important to please these random people we don't even know. So these people's opinions matter more to me, a parent, than my child's opinion and their belief of who they are. And when we put it that way, is that the message you want to send your kid? Instead of worrying about changing your kid to fit in, teach your kid how to stand up for who they are and find the people that they fit, the tribe that they fit in, but be able to stand up and stay strong and support them for who they are. So I really want to just reiterate that, because I think it's so important to think about what message we're sending when we're telling them to change for other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, what's so funny is that, you know, everybody that I've shared that my, you know, that my son is, he'll be graduating in May and he'll have his high school diploma and he'll have a welding certificate. They're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, that's how we've, you know, done high school. And they're blown away. Right. They didn't even know that was a thing. You know, they didn't even know that's possible. And I think to myself, who else is that going to help? You know, what other child is going to, you know, what parent is going to hear that that's an option? And another child is going to be able to succeed, but they didn't even know that that was out there.
And the other thing, I work with a lot of teenagers, and I'll dream with them, and they'll share some of the stuff, and we talk about like how, you know, what that dream looks like and what they want and what they can do now to start getting there. And I'll ask, well, what do your parents think of this? And they said, oh, I won't tell my parents; they won't support it. And so can you imagine having your own child have these big dreams and not feel comfortable sharing them with you? That's who they are. That's who they want to be. And they're not comfortable sharing because they're so afraid that you're going to put it down or not support them or push or steer them away from that dream. And I think in that case, I'd rather my teen tell me something that seems totally crazy than to not want to tell me at all.
Absolutely. It's very sad. It's very sad. And, you know, I know that when I was in education, one of the saddest essays I ever read was by one of my eighth grade girls about school. And she was writing about the stress of school, that she didn't even look forward to it. And she hadn't even started high school yet. She was an eighth grader. And she was in all these honors classes and, you know, all these things. And she was just like, it's just, you know, when I was little, I was so excited about school. And now all it is stressful. It's just going from one thing to the next and do this, do this, do this. And she's like, it's not fun at all. I can't wait for it to be over. And she was a bright person. She was, you know, she was involved in different activities. And I just think, you know, how sad it is to to think she hadn't even started her high school year yet, and she was already just wanting it to be over. So I know that you have something that our listeners can access to help them with motivating
teens. I do.
Teens.
So
can you
I
tell
just
us about
have
that?
My 7 secrets to motivating teens. And I put this together because it's one of the biggest things people ask me about all the time, especially these days with kids at home. And suddenly it's up to us to make sure that they're staying motivated. And I created a bit.ly link to make it really easy to find. So it's the bit.ly, the bit.ly, and it's /teen motivation, all one word. So it's bit.ly/teen motivation. And they can go grab that, my 7 secrets to motivating teens.
Awesome. Well, thank you so very much. Is there any final words of wisdom or nuggets that you could
The
give
one
us
thing
today?
I always want to say is that I'm always concerned when I come on that parents are going to feel like I'm beating them up, because I do have a lot of, here's what we kind of are doing wrong and that we need to change. And I just want to say, I'm actually here to lift people up and kind of wake people up and say, this is really, we need to just switch our mindset a little bit. So giving ourselves grace, knowing that we're doing what we know, the way we know how to do it, and just letting people know that when we switch our mindset and we look at our teens from this different perspective, it actually can make their lives and our lives a lot more peaceful and easier.
Thank you so much for joining us today for another episode. I hope that you got as much out of our time with Dr. Cam as I did. You know, teens are amazing. They're doing so many amazing things. They're growing and showing us how mature they're becoming in so many ways. Yet oftentimes we find that we're in the biggest battles at this time. That emotional letting them fly out of the nest is a really scary time for parents. I hope that Dr. Cam gave you some hope today and ways that you can connect better with your teens during this really special time in the lives of families. For more information about Dr. Cam, please go to askdrcam.com. I'll have all the information in the show notes. And please pass this episode on to other parents who you know can benefit, who are also in this season of parenting. I would love if you could please subscribe to All the Things with Kristen Schindler. Share this with other people. We look to those that are listening for feedback, for comments, for topics that they're interested in hearing more about. So we can't wait to hear from you. Just remember this, your message matters and your time with your kids matter. Your time with your teens matter. So don't take for granted that time, even if it's between riding from here and there and shuffling from, you know, wherever they're going. Spend the time, have the conversations, and let them know.